This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 20th of November 2022. Today is the History of Amateur Radio edition, and we recount stories of the early days in amateur radio in Western Australia, some of which forms the basis for our claim to amateur radio broadcasts since 1931. We spent a bit of time talking about the ACMA's consultation on the class licence and the proposed 1 kilowatt transmit power for advanced licensees. We urge you to study the material, discuss it with other people, and to have your say. At Perth Tech recently, Chris talked about a de-expedition boot camp, and today he's going to expand on that story. This is News West, VK6 ARN. Where you hear all of the story, no censorship, no persons excluded, and no rocket ships. It's all amateur radio news for radio amateurs. Our website is vk6.net.
The Daily News, 14th of November, 1936. State's first woman radio operator. The first amateur radio operator's proficiency certificate to be secured by a woman in Western Australia has been gained by Miss Ruth Longley of 7 Cuthbert Street, Shenton Park. Miss Longley is just 23 years of age and is one of the few women in Australia to gain this special certificate issued by the Postmaster General's Department. Until early this year, she knew as little of the intricacies of radio as the average listener in. She confessed today that she did not even know then that such a thing as a shortwave existed. She became interested in the work of the West Australian branch of the Wireless Institute about Christmas time, and in April decided to seek a proficiency certificate as an amateur radio operator. She completed her studies and sat for the examination in October. The time taken for her to complete the course and gain the certificate is regarded in amateur wireless circles as remarkably short. She gained her knowledge of radio in the study classes conducted by the Wireless Institute at the Institute Station, VK6WI, King Street, Perth. The instructor largely responsible for Miss Longley's tuition was Mr. Bert Stevens, who operates the station VK6BN at South Perth. To complete the course of study in such a short time demanded sacrifice from Miss Longley, but she persevered with great determination. She is a prominent woman cricketer and is secretary of the Western Girls team. She has been chosen as a member of the state to visit Adelaide in December. She has carried out the editorial duties for the Institute's bulletin for some months. A drapery saleswoman by occupation, Miss Longley does not envision radio as a future career. She has acquired her knowledge of the subject merely, as she described it, as an absorbingly interesting hobby. She intends to, without delay, apply for a station license and to build her own station set. The article contains a picture of Miss Longley with this caption: "After less than 7 months' study, Miss Ruth Longley of Shenton Park has secured the amateur radio operator's proficiency certificate. She is only 23 years old. In the picture, she is seen at the keyboard at station VK6WI, that of the Wireless Institute where she gained her tuition."
From the Daily News, Monday the 23rd of March 1931, Wireless Institute activities. On Saturday afternoon, a party of members from the Wireless Institute paid a visit to the Telegraph Operating Room, where with Mr. R. Botcher, Acting Superintendent of Telegraphs, as mentor, the party was shown the workings of many intricate and interesting machines. Perhaps the most interesting was the Murray Multiplex, a truly marvellous instrument which transmits and receives at high speeds. The teletype machine also claimed the attention of many. The President, Mr. Madden, thanked Mr. Botcher for the personal interest he'd taken in the visit. A visit at an early date will be made to the Cottesloe Automatic Telephone Exchange, claimed as the most up-to-date in the state. This will be followed up at intervals by trips to other places of interest to members. The Institute's transmitter, VK6WI, will go on the air on phone on Saturday evening, March the 28th, using the 80-metre band. This will be a test transmission in preparation to the dissemination of Institute news to country members, technical lectures to members, and testing of the set for phone, and demonstration of the principles involved for members preparing for their AOPC certificates. There will be a transmitters meeting held on Thursday next at the residence of Mr. Stan Owens in Mount Lawley. Holidays. VK6 Foxtrot Golf goes on holidays this week, and this column will be suspended for a period of 3 weeks. A pleasure deferred. the Australian Broadcasting Company announced that owing to unavoidable circumstances having arisen, the proposed diving stunt broadcast at Cottesloe is postponed until April the 4th next.
You all should have received the consultation paper from the ACMA. I received mine via email from them. If you didn't receive them, it's on the ACMA's website. And if you do nothing else, please have a read of it. The proposed class license document is a nightmare, resembling a piece of legislation in appearance. It's complex and difficult to navigate because of its non-linear nature. As you read, you're referred back and forth to and from various other sections, but have a read and you'll get the gist of where it's going. The important document for you to read is the consultation paper. This is where you can have your say. It's nearly all about advanced licensees. It seems they want more, but the rest of us don't need more. Standard licensees, here's your chance to settle the 6-meter divide thing once and for all. If you respond to no other questions, put in your vote to remove the stupid division in that band. It was ill-advised in the first place. It was all about protecting some analog TV channels, but there was nothing in the syllabus that taught standard or advanced licensees how to not cause interference to TV channels on 6 meters. There's the question relating to limiting the number of call signs a person may hold. Do you have an opinion on that? Well, tell them. The next, what seems like a multitude of questions, relate to granting of higher transmit power to advanced licensees. And that's fine and dandy, let's do it. But meanwhile, in granting a kilowatt to advanced licensees to bring them up to par with international levels, especially in contests, has the added effect of widening the gap in power levels between advanced licensees and standard and foundation licensees. So whether you're just calling CQ for a rag chew or in a contest or a pile-up or a net, there will suddenly be a wider gulf in power levels between advanced and other license levels. Some are already playing the incentive to upgrade and do the work cards, but let's be clear, there has been no extra work put in to earn a kilowatt. If granted, it's a gift to advanced licensees. Good on them, but let's look after everyone else at the same time. You have an opportunity to express your concerns and your opinion on this matter. I'd be putting in a bid for 100 watts for foundation, 400 watts for standard. We won't get it if we don't ask. Let's remember that you can go out right now and buy yourself an outpost radio license with no qualification at all and transmit at 100 watts on most bands, admittedly on channelized frequencies, and that also includes the 5 megahertz band that the Australian military objects to being granted to amateurs, but that's another story. The peak amateur radio bodies are dominated by advanced licensees, so standard and foundation licensees, get yourselves heard. They, the advanced licensees, won't advocate for the rest of us. Now, the consultation paper gives guidance on providing feedback, and that includes submissions from clubs and representative bodies. And they say that when they receive a submission from a club or a representative body, they consider that the submission represents the views of its members. And they said that they don't require submissions from individual club or representative body members expressing support for their club's or representative body's submission. Do you get that? If a member of a club or representative body holds a view that significantly departs from that of their club or representative body, they should make a separate submission. So you can do a bit of both, okay? And then they talk about pro forma submissions. Amateurs wanting to use a pro forma should add their signature to a single pro forma or a single petition. Processing large quantities of identical or near identical pro forma submissions will delay progress. Your cooperation is appreciated. In the last consultation, the Wireless Institute encouraged its members to each submit a pro forma response, resulting in some 700 identical papers, creating a huge workload for the ACMA for no gain. In fact, it probably convinced the ACMA staff that we're a bunch of tossers. The bullshit baffles brains approach doesn't work. And finally, whether you support the Wireless Institute of Australia, the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, or both, or neither, I don't care. But please do read what each of them is saying and form your own opinion. We'll only get one go at this, and we'll be stuck with the outcome. And I don't even want to think about the price of apathy.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
This item from the Daily News Perth Monday, 20th of July, 1931, shows that amateurs were involved in broadcasting entertainment in the early days. Wireless Institute activity. There was a well-attended meeting on Thursday evening when considerable business was transacted, including the admission of 8 new members. The new electric induction turntable motor and electric pickup, which had been built into an attractive cabinet by Mr. E. W. Stevens, a member, was displayed. This would be used in connection with the Sunday night transmissions from VK6WY on 80 metres. It has been decided to take out an agreement with the Australian Performing Rights Association whereby VK6WY may continue to broadcast experimental transmissions of gramophone records. The audited balance sheet submitted by the Treasurer, Mr. F. Tredray, showed that the Institute was in a sound position. Furniture and fittings, together with the Institute's transmitter, receiving and measuring instruments, was valued at £125, despite heavy writing down by depreciation, while the bank balance was most satisfactory. The following roster has been made for VK6WY, the name of the station operator being shown first, followed by the program manager. August 9, S. Madden with Mr. R. Agnew and Mr. N. Drummond. August 16, Mr. C. Cousins with Mr. J. James. August 23, Mr. S. Owen with Mr. R. Henwood. August 29, Mr. R. Henwood with J. Mead. September 6, Mr. J. Park with Mr. A. H. Wilson.
The Daily News, 25th September 1929. Amateurs' Dinner. There was a happy gathering of amateur enthusiasts at the dinner of the West Australian branch of the Wireless Institute of Australia at the Wattle Tea Rooms on Thursday night last. The guests included Mr. B. Holt, a past president, Mr. G. A. Scott, the radio inspector, Mr. W. G. Chapman, the officer in charge of VJP Applecross, and Mr. W. Barber, the owner and operator of station VK5WH Adelaide, and the lately chief engineer of station 5DN, who is on a visit to Perth. During the evening, Mr. Holt was presented by the President, Mr. F. H. Goldsmith, with an inscribed clock as a memento of his 7 years' association with the Institute. A case of spoons was given to Mrs. Holt. Items were rendered by 2 well-known radio entertainers, Messrs. David Lyle and Ted Scott, while a display of sleight of hand was contributed by a member, Mr. Dick Thomas. The latter's efforts provoked a warning from one member to the others to mind their valves, as Dick could take the filaments out of them without disturbing their appearance. The visitor from South Australia, who was said to have been bushed in Barrack Street, was given a compass to guide his steps during his stay in Perth. The Institute is in a flourishing state and now has a membership of 98. The new headquarters will be in the Young Australia building, where its transmitter VK6WI will be installed. A radio menu. A novel menu was one of the features of the wireless dinner last week and was as follows. Soup. Ether julienne. Fish. Fried shack snapper. Boiled zepp schnapper. And anode parsley sauce. Entrees. Braised antenna steak. And screened grid tomatoes. Hertzian lamb's fry and high-tension bacon. Oscillating chicken and positive ion croquettes with insulating bead green peas. Joints. Roast electron beef and Yorkshire reaction pudding, roast Bakelite lamb and electrolyte sauce, roast quartz crystal leg of veal, DX mutton and red currant QRM jelly, boiled BCL lamb and fluxite parsley, sweets, sherry trifle and loudspeaker cream, blancmange à la rectifier, and AC jelly, air guard tart, and QSL cream.
Covering Western Australia and beyond, this is News West, brought to you by WA Amateur Radio News, on air, online and on demand. This is VK6 ARN, and I'm Mark, VK4 MHQ.
From the Daily News, Wednesday, 5th of February, 1930, with the heading Wireless Institute Work. The Wireless Institute's transmitter, VK6WI, was installed in headquarters at the beginning of last week. The Zeppelin type of aerial was erected with feeders 60 feet long. On test, however, it was found that the feeders were too long and as a result have been cut to suit the frequency required. The first actual test from the headquarters was made on Monday night, January 27. After working two local stations in 6FT and 6FG, contact was made with a station in the Philippines, where a good report on the strength and note of the transmission was made. Since that date, many foreign stations have been worked and a great number of reports from throughout the state received, all of which refer to the pure, direct current note and the splendid volume. Regular schedules of operation for the various transmitters in the Institute are being worked out, so that the station will be on the air nightly, with the exception of each Thursday, which will be a silent night. Listeners in both city and country are requested to send in reports on the station, addressing them to VK6WI, Wireless Institute, YAL Building, Murray Street, Perth. At Thursday night's meeting, the Institute's new receiver was on exhibition. There were many exclamations of approval when the apparatus was shown because of the particularly neat craftsmanship shown in the construction and the clean layout and design. Several novel gadgets have been introduced into the construction, which are claimed to be completely original, but undoubtedly will be copied by Institute's members when they next build up sets. Several tests on 40 and 80 meters will be carried out by Institute members during the coming week, and reports from listeners will be welcomed. These will be both on Morse and phone. Candidates for examination. For several months, there have been a number of young men studying under the tuition of the technical officers of the Wireless Institute, with a view to securing transmitting licenses. The first batch of these, it is expected, will sit for their examination for the Amateur Operator's Proficiency Certificate at the next examination to be held early in March. Many of these students were unacquainted with more than the very rudiments of electricity when they joined, but are now fast gaining speed and reading and sending Morse, while their theoretical knowledge of radio has greatly expanded. As soon as this examination is over, a further batch of candidates will be prepared, and names are now being secured from members of those desirous of taking the intensive study course. Those who desire information about the course or who wish to become members of the Institute are asked to communicate with Mr. A. E. Stevens, 27 Strickland Street, South Perth.
I've noticed in the material from the Wireless Institute concerning the ACMA consultation that they've planted some bombs in there that just might go off in our faces. The first one is the idea that when the recognition of prior learning process is invoked, the standard across all industries is that the assessment may include an examination of some sort. It looks to me as though the Wireless Institute is keen to remove this safeguard, which is used where the assessor has some doubt or is seeking clarification of the candidate's abilities and knowledge. I urge you to tick the box to retain the ability to conduct an examination where it's seen to be in order. And the other concerns reciprocal licences. The ACMA, when it discovered that a group in Australia was promoting American licences as a shortcut, or rather a bypass mechanism, to gain an Australian AOCP, made it clear that reciprocal licences were for visitors and that they were only valid for a fixed period. It looks like the Wireless Institute wants to remove the time limit, opening the floodgates again for shortcut AOCPs for Australians who are not prepared to put in the work. So there are some issues and important ones at play here. Firstly, the American system is based on cramming on question banks, and exams are done online, and candidates can pass exams at three levels in a short period of time. That's three exams in one sitting. Secondly, the syllabus for the Australian AOCP Advanced complies with the CEPT Harmonised Amateur Radio Examination Certificate, HAREC for short. The purpose of the examination is to set a reasonable level of knowledge required for candidate radio amateurs wishing to obtain a license for operating amateur stations. The American examination system is not HAREC compliant, so that's a no-brainer. Say no. I've often heard the phrase, dumbing down the hobby, thrown around in amateur radio circles. If we allow the Wireless Institute to fly that kite, that's where we're going. Say yes, we want to retain the optional examination for the RPL process, and say, no, we don't want to remove the time limit on reciprocal licences. Tell people to get out there and do the same work that you did to get your licence.
Amateur Radio, you're standing in it. This is VK6, Amateur Radio News, and you're listening to News West.
Good morning. This is the Radio Amateur Helpline for the 20th of November, 2022. And last week I had the following, and it still may be available. It's an ICOM IC751 transceiver with a Yaesu Fox Popper 707 power supply, an Oscar Block 200 and a Kyoritsu SWR meter. And any prices will be considered. Please contact Ron. I don't know if he's still got all that equipment, but I haven't heard otherwise. So assume it's still available. And his telephone number, 0419-440-540. 0419-440-540. The email address is 123-ROMEO-OSCAR-NOVEMBER-FIGURE-4@gmail.com. It's 123-RON-4-gmail.com. Next item is a Philips Marconi FM signal generator type Tango Fox 1066 Bravo / 6, still available with a 20% discount. It's free with a 20% discount. You can't get better than that. Contact Mac and for that Marconi FM signal generator. And he can be contacted on his electric telephone, 0417-977-765. 0417-977-765, or email to vk6mike@iinet.net.au. And that is all I have for you, and that may be the last one forever. I don't know, depending on the outcome of the VK6 news. This is VK6 X-Ray Victor, and that's my email address as well, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. If you'd like anything or any correspondence entered into, please send to that email address. And a 7-3 from Roy.
It's been fun putting this history edition of News West together, because most of it is about the early days of amateur radio in Western Australia, and especially the bit about amateur radio news broadcasts commencing here in 1931. I'm not certain if amateur radio news broadcasts continued unbroken until the Second World War started. Amateur radio was suspended during the war, and from what I can determine, amateur radio news broadcasts resumed after the war, and for all intents and purposes has continued unbroken to this day. Well, I've said that before, and nobody refuted it, so it's probably true. One could question the value of an amateur radio news broadcast these days, with much more effective means available to us for the quick dispersal of information. There's a problem, though, with social media platforms when it comes to expressing one's opinion, is that someone is in charge and at some point will mediate the conversation or even cut it short if they don't agree with it. Nevertheless, there can be a fair exchange of information, providing the social media platform is managed fairly and equitably. Some certainly are not. I think the value in a news broadcast for amateurs is the social connection made during and after the callbacks. It's an excuse to get on air and say good day. In my 14 years as a News West producer, one thing that really stands out is that very few people will pipe up and say, "I really enjoyed that article on blah blah blah," or "would you consider adding X, Y and Z to the discussion?" Unfortunately, by far the loudest comments about our news program usually preface their comments with, "I don't listen to the news, but," and then proceed to criticise on what they thought somebody else heard. Some, and a loud vocal some, have accused News West of being a RASA mouthpiece. They have that idea fixed in their heads and they won't be convinced otherwise, but the truth of the matter is that the WA Amateur Radio News was reporting on what's happening in amateur radio long before RASA was even thought of. We both promoted the Wireless Institute of Australia and discussed what they were doing. We even organised a WIA annual general meeting in Fremantle in 2013, and I was a WIA director at the time, and I was a director for some 6 years. Several years ago, WA Amateur Radio News wrote to the WIA and to RASA, inviting them both to become regular contributors to News West. RASA said, "Thank you very much," and has been contributing since. The Wireless Institute secretary said, "No thanks, we don't need to." That, my friends, is why there's no WIA content in News West. They've been invited and they declined. So there's a history lesson for you, and please remember it. I guess those who never listen to the news will have something to say about what they never listen to. As I've told you many times before, over the last few years I've been looking to hand over News West to a successor because I didn't want the next person to step into dead man's shoes, as was my lot in 2008. I offered to babysit News West for a few weeks while Dennis was unwell, then he died on me. Let me tell you that I have no plans to die in the foreseeable future, and as far as I'm aware, nobody has a plan to see that I do. In volunteer organisations, it's common for people to be reluctant to put their hand up to replace the incumbent of a position, and that appears to be the case now with News West. To that end, I'm vacating the position of News West producer, effective immediately. Any person or group who is interested in being my replacement is welcome to have the discussion and decide what kind of a framework that they wish to work within or without, up to you. Thanks to those people who have privately encouraged me, however, I can't continue this task forever. I leave News West in good shape. Sincere thanks to everyone who has supported me and News West over the last 14 years. 7-3, everyone.